Yesterday, a friend of mine told me that she goes into the prison, state prison, someplace in New York, to teach meditation to prisoners. And one of the first things she often says when she shows up, especially for a new group, she says to them, the state has your body, but not your mind. And when she says that, they all sit up. And then they're interested. They're some spark. What's this? And she says, well, in terms of the mind, I can be just as much in prison with the mind as you can be with yours. So then she establishes that commonality. She can't say that she's in prison with them physically, but mentally the mind is such a powerful. So to get interested in your mind, what is the mind? And to pay attention to it and take care of it. And what is it to be in prison in your mind? What is it to be out of prison with your mind? So a story that is a participatory story, if you'd like, because the way a story is crafted, it talks about you. So you live in a neighborhood where every morning, going to where you have to go to work or school or wherever you need to go, you have to pass by an empty lot, a big empty property. It's overgrown with weeds and stuff. And one day, this young dog, it's just a wild stray dog, appears there in that lot. And it's a little bit wild and untamed, and it comes out of the lot onto the sidewalk when you come by, and it kind of is a little bit barking and snarling a little bit, and not so bad, it's not so scary exactly, but it's a little bit concern, and so you kind of shoo it away, and one day you kind of actually kick it a little bit, and other days you throw sticks or rocks at it just to get it away. You kind of don't like this little pest of a dog. But then you notice that the dog actually, as it gets bigger, it's strong, adulthood, it gets meaner. And meaner. And more, comes out with great ferocity and viciousness, when you walk by. And becomes a real neighborhood problem for you, this dog that's vicious and dangerous and looks like it's certainly going to bite someone soon, if not you. And so you get really involved in solving the problem of the dog. And so you call the police, and they try. But whenever the police come, the dog just seems to disappear. You talk to the owner of the property, and with great expense and effort, a great fence is built between the sidewalk and the lot, and the dog luckily is on the other side. But that lasts about a week before the dog finds a way out or pushes open the planks of the fence. There's a dog again. You get a really, you tend to go through the neighborhood with a really big stick. You find a big staff. So whenever the dog comes, you can hit it and push it away. The dog's a real problem. And you figure, you talk to neighbors and city council members and about this problem, this dog problem, this thing. And it's perfectly reasonable that you should address this problem because it's a neighborhood nuisance. It's a danger to you and to the people walking by. And who knows, maybe the dog's rabid. And so, an issue that really has to be addressed, and somebody needs to do it. And if those elected officials don't do it soon, you're going to vote them out of office. And those police, and you write letters, and you can start getting really angry, not only at the dog, but also at the community that's not doing enough for it. That dog. And then, first, causes and conditions come together in such a way that you get introduced to meditation. And so you decide to meditate one morning. And you feel kind of calm after the meditation. And after that, you still have to go down the street and walk by that lot where that dog is. Of course, you walk on the other side of the street. You have enough sense to be a little bit further away. And the dog comes out, and the dog is snarling and barking, but the dog actually stays further away. It is not quite as adamant. So that's interesting. You make it to where you're going to go. The next day, you get up and do your meditation, and you still feel kind of calm, maybe a little bit calmer even. And the dog comes out and is still snarling, but not as adamantly as the dog was before. And you begin wondering, what's this thing about, I wonder if there's a relationship between me being calm and how the dog is. And this is interesting. So you're going to do an experiment. So the next day you don't meditate. And you notice that as you approach the street, you feel the anxiety and some anger bubbling up in you. It somehow starts getting a little bit the upper hand. It's not so calm anymore. And sure enough, that dog comes out, and the dog actually comes right up against, nips at your heels. So you give it a good kick. And the dog backs off for that day, but the next day, the dog's even more vicious. So that's interesting. I did that experiment. Let's go back and meditate some more. So you meditate. The next few days of meditating, you notice that you're kind of calm. You're going through the street calm. There's some anxiety there, but the anxiety somehow doesn't grab you. Some of the calm is stronger. And you see the dog doesn't quite, you know, the dog starts every day, starts getting a little bit calmer, more settled. And then they're not as vicious. And you start thinking, well, this is interesting. There seems to be a relationship with how the dog is, how the dog appears, and how I am. I thought it was just a dog problem. They had to fix the problem out there. But there, you know, there's opportunity here. I could actually do something with me, and it seems to have an effect on the dog. So then it occurs to you to not only be calm, meditate before you go down the street, but one day it even occurs to you to bring a dog biscuit. And it occurs to you you shouldn't do that because the dog's a problem. You don't want to reward it for being a problem dog in the neighborhood. And, you know, someone should really fix that problem there. And offering some kindness to the problem, that's not good. There should be discipline. But in any case, you bring the dog biscuit and you've meditated really good that morning. And the dog does come out, a little bit snarling, but it kind of stays on the side of the street and kind of looks at you. And the dog even has a little curiosity in its eyes as it snarls. So from one side of the street to the other, you throw that dog biscuit. And the dog is pretty happy with that. And no one's ever fed it before. And so you realize that somehow the dog is affected by how you are in relationship to the dog. And if you're calm, if you're kind, if you're generous. And then as you keep doing this, going down the street, you realize that, you know, that actually you don't have to walk across the street on the other side of the street anymore. You can walk on the same side of the street as the dog. And if you stop at the edge of the empty lot, the dog's actually kind of scared. The dog kind of, not angry anymore, snarling, but a little scared. And so you just kind of stand there and offer your presence, offer your kind of just... Next day you do the same thing, but you actually bend down on your knees and kind of hold out your hand, open hand gesture, universal gesture of, you know, I'm not holding a weapon, I'm safe. And after a few more days, the dog comes over and licks your hand. But then as you continue this process of understanding what's going on there, you see that some days you're having a hard day, challenges of your day, and you forget to meditate, or even meditation doesn't help, and you're kind of grumpy. And somehow there seems to be like how your mood is, seems to have little effect on the dog. You know, you're not quite willing to stop and put out your hand, and or you go by in a huff, and the dog's kind of like, oh, it kind of frightens the dog to see someone going by in a huff, you know. Mm-hmm. So you start seeing this interesting relationship between how you are and the dog. And then a really interesting thing happens. You get really interested in how you are. And you begin noticing that you know when you're calm. You know when you're anxious. You know when you're in a hurry. You know when you're upset. You know when you're feeling generous. And there's this knowing of how you are. At the beginning of the story, you just knew the dog was a problem. You didn't know yourself at all. This dog, the problem's out there. But now you're getting to know yourself, but more important to know yourself, this thing happens, you know that you know. You know that you're calm. You know that you know that you're calm. There's this real sense of knowing that's there. And the sense of knowing becomes stronger or clearer or more dominant, fills the field more fully. The sense of, oh yeah. And the knowing that you're calm is different than the calm. The knowing that you're anxious is different than the anxiety. The knowing that the dog is there is different than the dog being there. And you start being curious about this knowing. What's this knowing about? So you try to pay attention to knowing. Then you realize you can't notice the knowing unless you know something. So you say, well, okay, so I'll have to keep, you know, I have to know what's going on. So you kind of notice what's happening here and there. But you notice as you do that, you know that you know. Have you ever been in a crowd of people? Maybe everyone's kind of frantic. You're not frantic. For some reason you're calm. And then you look across the room and there's one other person who's calm, who's not caught in the fray and the, you know, drama of it all. And you look at each other, you see each other's eyes, and you say, you kind of get a sense, feeling. Not only do you know, not only are you both not caught in the drama, but you both know that you know. And there's meeting of this knowing that you know. And there's kind of a spark. There's something there that goes on. Some, a little bit more energy, aliveness that happens because you share that you know that you know. You know you're not caught together. So the knowing becomes very interesting for you. And perhaps you make the analogy. You know, sometimes when I'm really clearly knowing what's happening, I'm walking down the street and the dog's there and all that stuff, and the knowing, it's kind of like I'm sitting in the car when I'm going through the car wash. And, you know, when you're sitting in the car, when you're going through the car wash, the machine's taking you through, and there's all those buffers and the sprays of water and the suds and all that. And it's kind of dramatic. But it's really, it's certainly dry inside the car, if you remember to keep the windows closed. It's dry, and you feel pretty peaceful, or it's kind of very peaceful, very still inside. It's so busy outside. The contrast makes you feel kind of still, safe, peaceful, perhaps. And the knowing has that quality. There's a sense of safety of being at home, being still. It's right here. It's bigger than your body, the knowing. It's like clarity. You know that you're calm, or know you're angry, or know the dog is there. That there's something about that knowing, that if you tune into it, that sense of knowing something, that there's a clarity that seems maybe bigger than your body, bigger than your head. Maybe. Kind of like the being in the car is bigger than your body. That's stillness in the car. But maybe some of you, you know, even that in the car feels claustrophobic. You know, this drama of the car wash. So you take away the car wash. Or maybe you're in this room here. You know, this room is pretty amazing. There's many, many years of people sitting, meditating in this room. It has a high ceiling. You hear the traffic sometimes outside. Sometimes it can be very still in this room. But I would say, if you're in the knowing, this room is always still. In the sense of knowing that stillness, that clarity, can be as big, as expansive as this room. But if that's claustrophobic for you, then you can take away the walls. And that sense of knowing can be bigger than even this room, even this building. It's a strange way of talking, perhaps, but it can be experiential sense that there's a knowing, sense of knowing, or awareness, a registering, or taking in, that's kind of, that whatever you experience, whatever goes on for you, is not out there. Whatever is happening to you has to be mediated through your senses, has to be mediated through the way that experience is registered in the eyes and the ears and the body and the brain. So, you know, physically, we don't know anything at all out there. We only know what's being processed here. And so in a sense, you know, that what's happening out there is happening within. Physically it is, in a sense, through how we experience it. But then the sense of knowing, that sense of clarity, or can at times feel very expansive, very inclusive. Everything's included within it. And it isn't so much that you know particular things, though that's an important part of it. It's almost as if there's a field of knowing, or a clarity or peacefulness of knowing, a sense of calm or peace, within which the knowing occurs, within which the experiences of things in life occur. So you're walking down the street and the dog comes. And that what was a problem out there before becomes something that occurs within that field of knowing. The dog is not, in a sense, separate from you, or separate from that field. Now that might be scary, because it's a little bit intimate. You know, if you don't have a clear boundary, clear, you know, here I am, the dog, the problem is out there, then what's going to follow? Do I have to take the dog home with me? What happens? What happens then if I just kind of, if awareness, knowing, embraces the dog, holds the dog? And one of the things I think happens is that the sense of reciprocal relationship becomes clear. Earlier on, you realize that there is a reciprocal relationship. If you throw stones at the dog gets angrier. If you're kind to the dog or calmer on the dog, that seems to have an effect on the dog. And I think that as the sense of kind of a wider openness, clarity, calm, that holds it all, that includes it all, that allows it all to be there within it, occurs, I think the sense of reciprocity, the mutuality, is stronger actually. And one of the ways that it's stronger is also a kind of a stronger on us, affects us. I've noticed that if I'm present for what's going on, sometimes I'll have this thought arises, attitude arises, that something else should be happening. And if I get onto the bandwagon of this, something else should be happening, it actually takes me away from really being present here. And it kind of shatters that sense of being knowing presence, this wider presence, awareness, here I am. And there's a lot of things that will shatter it, a lot of things that will not make it possible. If you get caught up in, you know, future planning too much, or you get caught up in anxiety, or caught up in defending yourself, or caught up in, you know, being critical of something. But for me, I've noticed recently is that something different should be happening, that bandwagon, that thought. And one option with that, when I see myself getting distracted by this thought, something else should be happening, is I could treat it like the dog initially. I could dismiss it, push it away, put up a wall to it, come back and some, you know, to what's really going on. As if thinking about what should be happening isn't what's going on. And then there's a very interesting thing that happens when rather than dismissing anything, is to fold it in, into the knowing, into the awareness. This is also happening in the field. And then in the situations I found recently when I did that, then when I said, oh, this also is happening here, and kind of held it within it, then actually I came, there was kind of like a sense of a totality, of a whole. So this, I got a sense of the bigger picture than what was going on. And then it was really easy to come back and be present to the task at hand. It wasn't a struggle. It wasn't like I had to push something away. It was a way of including it. So I think mindfulness practice is a lot about this inclusion. One opportunity in mindfulness practice is to include everything within the knowing. And just as there can be kind of reciprocal relationship between you and the dog, there's a reciprocal relationship between you and the capacity to know, or this field of knowing, the sense of clarity or calm. And as things are included within it, as you be present for things as they occur, and you allow them to come into the, not just kind of your normal reactive mind, the small mind, but this big mind, this bigger reactivity, it actually helps or fosters or nourishes some really beautiful qualities inside of ourselves. And just like when those prisoners were told, the state has your body but not your mind, they kind of got interested. They kind of sat up straight. You know, it's a beautiful quality to suddenly pay attention, have energy, be attentive. There you are. Something beautiful gets, you know, they're ready to listen, they're ready to include. So this knowing becomes strong and you really, and becomes a bigger part of your life. These inner qualities that could be called variety of strengths or inner capacities get stronger. And there's a whole variety of things that can get stronger. There's stronger sense of energy, kind of alertness, presence. There can be a stronger sense of curiosity or interest, investigation. What is this? There can be a stronger capacity actually to focus, to be attentive, to be kind of be really present for something. There can be a greater sense of intelligence in relationship to what's going on. And intelligence has many different qualities. Some people might call some of it intuition, discernment, differentiation, clarity of what's going on. There's qualities of joy that can arise. Strong sense of joy can bubble up, well up. In this reciprocal relationship with the knowing, again, enter into this knowing capacity field. Happiness. One of the really beautiful things that can arise, bubble up, is a great sense of equanimity. Being very equanimous, very at ease, very kind of non-reactive in a way that feels very satisfying, but very present. So all this is learned by walking down the street. And at first, the dog was the problem out there. And some of us have dogs in our lives, like, you know, there are problems out there. And some of the problems out there are not really out there, you know, external from us, but the dogs are in here, inside of us. And we walk by that particular neural connection. And something inside of us comes out, bites us. And then we bite back. And this mutuality, this relationship, and those neural connections get more and more vicious because you're vicious to it or something. So sometimes we treat inside of us as the problem. And at some point, hopefully, there's a shift of orientation to really appreciate that how we are in relationship to the problem, to life, actually has a big impact on how life is, the so-called problems. And there's a beginning taking responsibility for how we are and not being fixated on the problem out there or the problem inside here, if that's where it is, as if it has to be fixed. Take responsibility for how we are in relationship to it, how we are. And that becomes an interesting process then of understanding who we are, what's going on, mindfulness of ourselves. And then as the mindfulness gets stronger, occasionally this beautiful thing happens, that the sense of the knowing that you know becomes stronger and stronger. And the knowing you know is really different than anything you know. It's not about what you know, it's about how you know it, the field that holds it, the awareness that kind of has it. And you realize that knowing that you know, that wider knowing, is not your ego. And you don't have to get rid of your ego. You don't have to get rid of anything, because there's this thing which is not personal. It's not even personal. Some people would call it transpersonal. Any attempt to claim it as yours is just another activity within it. You can't claim it as your own. But it has these wonderful qualities. Certainly of being calm or expansive or clear. And it seems to come sometimes with these wonderful other qualities of energy and joy or equanimity or calm, tranquility. And then there's a very different relationship to the problem of life. Very different. It kind of can be almost like a sea change when you realize that this great mutuality, this reciprocity that happens when we live in a world that's mutual. We live in a world where we influence each other. And that one of the beautiful ways of participating in this is to have fold everything into the knowing, fold everything into the awareness. Or to have the awareness to be, the knowing be so expansive and open that everything happens within it. Even the fear to be open and intimate happens within it, as opposed to fear happening and you get kind of velcroed to the fear. The fear arises, but there's this thing which is not fear, which is not you even, that knows it all, that holds it all. And it's really something. It's really an amazing thing to begin exploring what happens to you when you rest in the knowing, that big knowing. It's really it's really helpful. It's really interesting. It's really a wonderful thing. And it can be disorienting a little bit. It takes, you know, it's like you know, you get on a ship and high sea, and at first it's a little bit hard to get your balance. It can be a little bit hard to get your balance sometimes in this beautifully impersonal knowing that can go on. And in my experience, it seems to give rise to, make space for something I call innate intelligence. When there's a problem out there that I have to fix, then I have to use my assumed intelligence to try to fix the problem. My poor little Gil has to kind of problem solve. And there's still problem solving goes on, but there can be a feeling of there's something beautifully, maybe the word impersonal is not nice for people, some people, but something that's not, some problem solving that comes from the innate intelligence. Something that's just kind of, some people would call it intuition, maybe. So what is it to trust your innate intelligence as opposed to your effortful intelligence? So if it happens that some of you encounter a dog in your life one of these months, one of these years, something that could be called a dog, a problem, it might happen. And if it happens, maybe you can think about this story and see if the story can show you a new way. So that's what I had for this morning. That's all that came out of my innate intelligence. Sometimes there's a limit. Feels complete. So thank you.